The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
So, thank you so much for coming. The weather is quite lovely tonight. I came from L.A., and I was sort of hoping for some snow. I thought it'd be really pretty, but I'm sure everybody here is really tired of the snow, so rain will do too. So thank you so much, and my first question I just have to know is there anyone out here who hasn't heard of Skinny Bitch? That's really cool. Oh, there's two. Okay. Hi, welcome. So this is Skinny Bitch, and I think it's been a little over 2 years now that the book has been on the New York Times bestseller list. And the reason I'm so proud, not just for me, is because this book is vegan. And it talks about how to have a vegan lifestyle. And when this book came out about 4 years ago, that was not quite the most hip conversation. People, I think, were still thinking it was granola and hippie and crunchy and, oh, my God, tofu. And, you know, we really managed to do something unique and different, and it was a really conscious decision to say, you know, this is a diet that really worked for us, and it changed our life and our health, and, you know, we did it for the animals, but let's open a discussion, let's talk about it in a way that is going to make people take notice. We got to, you know, really change the language and the discussion of it, and fortunately, it worked really well, and I think, you know, bringing it to sort of the Hollywood world and having Victoria Beckham pick up the book and get photographs with it, it sort of, you know, brought a really good cool factor to it, saying, which I know sounds a little fluffy, but that's what's really going to bring it into the mainstream, into the limelight, and a lot of celebrities soon caught on after that. And I think it was just the planets all aligned, sort of what I say, that it was great timing. I think people were, either the language made them laugh in the book, or they were like, oh, potty mouths. But the point of the language, and it's harsh, it was really just a wake-up call to say, you know, when I first got on the health bandwagon, I remember calling Rory and I was my writing partner and saying, you know, this is crazy. I can't believe that I'm learning this about food and that so many diseases are preventable, and this is all because of the food we eat. So we were thinking, tough love. You know, people aren't really taking this seriously, so it's time to hit them with a little bit of tough love. So we talk like that normally, and unfortunately I have a three-year-old. I'm working on the language, but I think that it was important to keep, you know, sort of that tough love approach and to keep the language the way it was, and a lot of people have made comments that that's the way that they remembered all the material, and that's the way that they were able to say, all right, I knew it was bad for me, but I get it this time. This is sort of like, it's not really, you know, this scientific, you know, clinical book, but there was some really good information, and it was delivered in a way that was fun, and it makes you laugh, and then it makes you cry in certain parts too, but you remember it. So I think for that, you know, we've been really fortunate that it's more mainstream now. And you look at books like The Kind Diet, and Tal Ronan has a great vegan cookbook. He was on Oprah. And then, of course, Eating Animals, Jonathan Safran Foer that's done amazing. So you think of what's been happening, you know, even just in the last year, that it's, you know, having been part of that, of opening the discussion that it's okay to talk about the V word now. So it's been really nice to be part of that and to have, you know, opened up that world. And I was thinking about tonight when I, you know, what I wanted to say. And I think the biggest question came to my mind, like, what does it mean to me to be vegan? And it isn't just about food. It isn't just about, you know, saving the animals, but it's a whole lifestyle. And, you know, when I was researching the book, there were so many different things that I was finding out about. And it's like the more you get into that world, the more you start thinking, you know, this isn't just about my food. This is about the clothes I'm wearing. This is about, you know, my carbon footprint. So there's so many things that are involved in this lifestyle. So I think it was important for me to say, well, you know, how can I do my part that's going to be, that's going to affect my life, that's going to really help the planet, it's going to help the animals. And it's really, you know, my really cool boots. These are $20 in New York City, and they're all man-made material. And my purse is, I have a really great purse, and they're hard to find. And it's all recycled materials, and it's vegan. So it's like little things like that. It's like bringing those things from your plate to your everyday life. It's, you know, not having, you know, animal products there's honey or beeswax in everything. So it was little decisions like that to say, well, I want this to be my whole lifestyle. I want to, you know, I want to see if I can do this wholeheartedly. And once you get into it and you see that, you know, the meat industry and the production of what they're, you know, what we're putting in our food, even the carbon footprint, like I was talking about, the more that I was doing research after the book, it got to be a whole nother issue. And I think that's a really big thing that people are talking about now. It's, you know, aside from the ethical reasons, what is the factory farming doing to, the environment? And I know the statistics are not that exciting and boring, but I have to give a few because it's really amazing what the food industry is doing for, you know, for the environmental issues. Our food system contributes close to about 20% of the nation's carbon dioxide emissions. And raising animals for food causes more greenhouse gas emissions than cars. So, you know, it sort of became clear to me, and this has really sort of been a more talked about issue lately, it's, you know, this is something that not just animal rights activists or, you know, people on this diet for health reasons, but, you know, looking at the bigger picture, how it's affecting our planet, you know, to be eating a meat-based diet, you know, just the amount of land that we're using to grow the grain for the animals, to house the animals so they can live. It's like, I think 30% of the Earth's surface is now for the animals, for the pasture, and that's quite a lot. There was a Cornell study on diets, and they found that a low-fat vegetarian diet needs less than half an acre per person per year to produce their food, with a high-fat diet with a meat eater needs about a little over 2 acres for their food. So there was just such a big difference of, you know, how this is affecting our world, our planet. The amount of grain that we're using to feed the animals, it's 1900, it was just over 10% of the total grain grown worldwide was fed to animals, and today it's over 60% of the U.S. grain is fed to livestock. And when the U.N. is estimating that about 840 million people are undernourished, you're thinking, you know, wow, this grain could be better served to feed people, but we're feeding it to the animals so we can fatten them up and we can in turn eat them. So that's another thing that, you know, what does it mean to me to be vegan? But I feel like, you know, making little changes like that, being conscious of not just me, but the bigger picture of, you know, the animals and the environment, you know, what could the extra food be used for, you know, people in other countries that need the food? And are we, you know, do we really need to be going into that, into the excess of, oh, but I want my meat. And people think that having a vegan diet is, it's like, oh, okay, you eat lettuce and salads and it's boring. But there is a Skinny Bitch cookbook, and I'm working on another one now. It's due in November. And that's really to just show that there's so many great ways to enjoy being a vegan. I think now we're living in such a great time where there's so much available. If you live in a big city, there's usually some great restaurants. There's meat alternatives, cheese alternatives. And Italian is my favorite. And I still get to eat it about three nights a week. And I don't miss having the ricotta or the cheese, but there's other really great things to enjoy as well. I think it's just about, you know, taking the things that you love to eat and just, you know, even if it's, you know, reducing your meat by a couple nights a week, that can sort of, you know, bring us to what it does for your health. You think the risk of all the disease that we're facing now in this country, heart disease, obesity, type 2 diabetes, cancer, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and you think that, you know, studies show that a lot of this is, it's diet related. So, you know, even by taking a stand and changing your diet just a little bit, and, you know, we talk about it in the book, it's like, it seems extreme going vegan, and I always tell people it's, you know, it took me a really long time to get to that way of eating. So it should be like that for a lot of people. You sort of, you know, transition your diet, make some changes. And the reason that I started eating that way was I had a lot of health issues too, and I couldn't afford health insurance. So for me, I was like, okay, so I'm gonna have to really think about, you know, what do I have control over? What can I do to help myself? And everything pointed to food. And I changed my diet, and I felt so much better. And that was sort of the light bulb that went off. And I said, okay, I think I'm going to do this for a living. I really like this. I need to spread the word. So, you know, I think it's very important to also have a reason, you know, to want to be healthy or to want to be part of, you know, saving some animals or making the environment, you know, a better place. But it's a lifestyle, and it's really great to feel like you're part of something. And but the book is a really fun read, laugh out loud. And basically, right now it's I'm promoting a box set. So we did Skinny Bastard for the men because we can't leave them out. And women were saying that their boyfriends and their brothers wanted to read the book, but they didn't want to be caught dead with the girl on the cover in public. So we made it a little hip for the boys. So the box set is available, Skinny Couple, and yeah, it's a good combination for both men and women. So we are going to do the questions, and if you guys want to raise your hand if you have a question, and then I can call on you, and then they're going to bring you a microphone. Yes, Ty.
If I adopted a vegan diet, or if most people adopted a vegan diet with no deliberate intention of getting thinner, do you think that I or most people would get thinner even though they weren't trying to get thinner just because they adopted a vegan diet?
You know, it doesn't happen all the time. And sometimes people do email me and they say, you know, oh, I've been doing this for a while and I'm not losing weight. You know, there's a lot of factors involved too. And I, you know, you never know. Generally the answer is yes. That is mostly the case. I don't want to, you know, say every single time you're going to learn, you know, you're going to lose weight, but yes. And I think the majority of the people say that when you give up dairy, that's when you really start to find that you do lose weight. And a lot of the people who have allergies, they say the same thing about the dairy. But yeah, I mean, it also depends on, you know, how you're eating, because when I was a vegetarian at first, I was really unhealthy. And I thought, well, it doesn't matter. I'm not eating meat or, you know, whatever, so I'm healthy. No, that's not the case. So I wasn't, you know, some people don't lose weight because they're really not eating well enough. But typically, if you're following a healthy diet, yes, you will. You had a question back there.
I enjoy going to a lot of raw food potlucks. I was wondering if you were familiar with Victoria Butenko, her Green for Life and other books, and if the raw food movement has any effect or influence on your writings?
You know, I haven't heard of her. Yes, raw food definitely. It's something that I do like to add to my diet. I think it's really important to have some raw foods. I think it's great for the, you know, for your body to just get a rest, have the enzymes from your food and not let your body have to work so hard. And that, for me, I kind of feel like that's my cleanse, that's my maintenance when I haven't been so good with the healthy eating, is that I try to incorporate as much raw food as I can. I think for me, vegan is as far as I would go for like a daily basis. I couldn't do the raw all the time. But I think it's great. Even if it's, you know, just salads you're incorporating every day or, you know, little side dish, I think it's really good for you. Right here. Oh, there's a gentleman here with the dark sweater with his arm up.
My wife and I have read your book, and for those who haven't, can say that it's absolutely terrific.
Thank you.
We've been vegans for about a year and a half, and we've become very comfortable with it. The challenge for us sometimes is when we go out, and particularly if you're not able to call ahead of time to a restaurant, and especially going to restaurants that don't necessarily have vegan or even vegetarian options, and trying to find protein, because I find the older I am, I'm looking for protein to kind of balance, be there mm-hmm. in my meal. And again, in our controlled environment at home, it's easy now because we've mm-hmm. got all those things, but it's really a struggle when you go out. And any suggestions you have in that regard would be great.
I totally agree. And I think as a mom, you know, I have a 3-year-old, and that was sort of something for me too, because I can control I love to cook, and I don't go out to eat that much. And I live in LA, so even if when I want to, I have a million different restaurants at my disposal. But right, it's not always that realistic. What I tend to look for is ethnic restaurants, Ethiopian, Indian, Mexican. You're shaking your head. Do you know? You agree? It's the greatest. Honestly, like, there's so many other cultures that don't focus on meat as their main staple, and it's using lentils and beans, and there's so many. I think Indian and Ethiopian really could be my favorite. Sometimes when you go to the Mexican restaurants, which I still love, and you know, sometimes you're thinking, do I really want to know what they're cooking the rice and beans in? I'm starving. I'm out. Do I really, you know, it's a little like, I don't want to know, but I'm going to order it because I'm starving. But, oh, is, you know, when I think of where my parents live in the country in Maryland, no, they're not going to find a lot. But I think if you're living, you know, in a pretty, you know, hopefully decent area, just go ethnic. That's sort of the best idea. The lady right there. I want to hear where you go to eat.
Well, I do cook a lot at home, but I actually kind of a tag-along question to Frank's question. I wonder if you deal with the class and economic issues around food and health, because when you talk about ethnic food, the poor people around the world have very simple, basic foods that they eat, not a lot of meat. In our country, you go to Whole Foods, you buy 4 or 5 things, and you've spent $45. And if you live in a poorer community, a lot of them don't even have supermarkets. So you're stuck with the corner store and junk food and no fresh fruits or vegetables. So what, and, you know, spreading the vegan philosophy, what do you think about that, and how do you conquer that?
That's a really, really good question. There was an article about that in Los Angeles about, there was someone who was trying, there was a family, and they were trying to lose weight, they're trying to get healthy, and there was nothing in their neighborhood, nothing even close that they could go to get any sort of fresh food. It was awful, and they were taking the bus pretty far just to have to go get to a regular grocery store to get some fruit and vegetables. And that really struck me as sad. And I know that there's actually some initiatives of the community that are trying to bring little, you know, farmers markets or even just small fruit and vegetable stands that come in, which it's honestly the most horrible thing that I can imagine, that this is America. I mean, and you can drive a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes away, and you can get a good grocery store, but it should just be a staple. I think that that says a lot about, we have a country that is, we're sick, and it's really sad. We're not getting any healthier. We're not making it any easier for people to get healthy, though. And you think about even what's in our schools, that the cafeteria, they don't cook anything. They open it from a can, and then they serve it. And as a mom, who, my son's going to go to school in a few years, that horrifies me. And you can pack him lunch, but he can dump it and go buy something gross, and there's nothing I can do. I do think that, one of the things that we should be doing is trying to say, whatever communities that we're in, is this isn't okay. It's really going to take action maybe from, and that's work, I know, but taking action from, your community and trying to get together. I know there have been some really great schools where the parents have gotten together and said, we really want to work hard with the PTA. We're going to try to raise some money. And if the school's not going to provide it, then we'll do what we can, to make sure that our kids are getting better food. But it's unfortunate that it takes a lot of work and effort from the people in the community. And then, you've got the school system that they need funding from the soda companies and the fast food places. And it's really, really sad because, in that movie, Food Inc., they're talking about, I have a couple dollars and I want to feed my family. I can feed my family at McDonald's because they have the dollar menu, but I would spend more if I'm somewhere else. But yeah, don't even think of walking into Whole Foods. I have this thing, I go for two things and it's never less than 100. It's how? How does that happen? What I do think is important is local farmers markets and trying to, they even have, co-ops where you can join and you get a basket of food maybe once a week. I hope that they start, trying to get in it as many communities. For me, I think that's the best bet is trying to get, even if it's a little farm stand or bringing something to the community because the food's going to be local. It's going to be, to the subject of organic. They may not have the USDA organic, stamp. But if you talk to the farmers, they don't treat, they're not spraying with pesticides. They're not traveling far. The food's not, coming from another country. So, the prices are low. So if we can try to bring the farmers markets, into the communities, that would be good. I think you had a question.
Hi. I also enjoyed your book, and I know in your book you mentioned about organic, and you were just mentioning today about the carbon footprint, and I feel like one of my internal struggles is sometimes going to the grocery store and seeing the organic choices are from Mexico or far away. So I was just wondering if, in your journeys, if you've come up with some kind of some solutions or something that, how you kind of deal with that struggle also.
Yeah, a lot of people ask that, organic is expensive and, how do you even know that it is truly organic? For me, I can't always buy organic too. In a perfect world, I would like to, but no, it doesn't happen for me. And sometimes I'm at a place and it's I really need this and it's not organic. But what I think is important is, there's a list called the Dirty Dozen. And it's sort of, every so often they sort of drop one and add another. But if you Google it, just Google the Dirty Dozen, it gives you a list. And those are really the foods that you really need to look for that are going to be organic. And then there's a Clean 15. So you'll have an idea, these foods, no, I'm not going to buy organic. But this, okay, I see why I definitely need to. Especially when we're getting foods from other countries. And they don't have any hard outer covering like a pineapple. They're going to spray before they get to us. It's like the U.S. has they do have a law about that. So if your fruits are going to be imported from somewhere else, I think grapes are one of the worst. What is it? Grapes from, I want to say Chile maybe. They're high on the list of go organic. So that I think peanut butter. That's a big one. That's another thing. Soybeans, too. So if I'm getting tofu or something like that, so then you don't have the, you know, genetically modified. So, yeah, no, don't have to worry about getting all of it. Get the ones that are really dangerous and then skip the rest. And the gentleman back there. Sorry, you had a hike back there.
There was a lady who used to be on television named DeAngelis, and I believe she was from the Philadelphia area. She had a master's degree in psychology, and her theory was that people overeat or engage in using nicotine, tobacco, alcohol, and other drugs because they're looking for that serotonin release from the brain, or epinephrine and endorphins and so on. She suggested that other alternatives were to be in love, to start a business, and so, and or to work out. Do you have any feelings on that subject? And if that, if you agree with that, what do you suggest people do as alternatives if that's why, where people have problems with their diet, have that particular situation?
That's a really good question. One of the reasons that, one, when I was mentioning that I had some health problems and I needed to change my health, I was having anxiety, stress, depression. My energy was like nothing. And I was literally in a brain fog. And I was just like, oh, my God, what's going on with me? I was having panic attacks. And I could not, I just really couldn't figure out what was going on. When I was doing research, I came across a book, Potatoes, Not Prozac. Oh, that was when the light bulb went off with me. And I was like, finally, like somebody, like, I understand what's wrong with me. And I read her book. I changed my diet. I mean, that was incorporated in a lot of stuff I was doing. And that was when I knew what I wanted to do for a living. It was amazing. She does explain a lot about sugar sensitivity, about, and she works with, the author works with alcoholics. And she was doing this study about how if you change the diet of people in recovery, how that would affect their long-term recovery. And it was enormous, how long they could, you know, I don't know what the rate was of a relapse, but it was, she found that it was, they had a much, much smaller amount of people that were relapsing when they changed the diet. And it's really a matter of, and I always want to be able to pinpoint, but when you think of, when people say, you know, if you eat a well-balanced diet of, you know, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, it's really true. You know, you need your B vitamins. Those are really one of the most important things that helped me. I started taking a B complex because in the beginning I just needed to get my health back together. And that really, really helped a lot. So I think the sugar, I was a really big sugar addict. That was sort of my, the sugar and the caffeine, that was my fix. So when I took the a lot of the sugar out of my diet, I started eating you know, nuts and seeds and whole grains and vegetables. I never ate any of that stuff, which is funny to say. Look where I am now, and I eat like crap. But then I upped my B vitamins, even calcium and magnesium, leafy greens, you can find it a lot. So basically, there's a lot of things in the food, and that's why it's having that well-balanced, healthy diet. And even if you're saying, well, you know, I have a cupcake fixation, but I know that every day I have a really good foundation of health. So, you know, I know that I can't go too crazy on sugar. I know what it's going to do to me. But because I eat really well during the day, every day, when I do eat the cupcakes or, you know, whatever, it doesn't affect me the same way. So, yes, I think that food, in that sense, saved my life. And vitamins. So it is possible. But again, you know, Potatoes, Not Prozac, great book. Even though I'm plugging my own. That's a great book, though.
She has a website called Radiant Recovery.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Oh, no, I love her. She changed my life. Radiant Recovery? Is it .org or no, .net? .com, okay. I think I saw another hand. Yes, the lady there.
Yeah, Your book actually sparked a discussion between my boyfriend and I about raising children vegan and vegetarian, and we have some different views on it. So if you could speak a little bit about your experience with your son and how it's affecting him.
My husband and I have the same discussions probably. My husband's French. He's not a vegan. He's never going to be a vegan. And I had to be okay with that, and it's okay with me. He doesn't cook meat in the house, but the cheese thing will never leave our house. He keeps it in a big plastic container covered, like tape, Dad's cheese. And now my son knows to go there. So that's the first part of the discussion. My son was vegan for the first year and a half. And it was really easy because I was making his own food. I breastfed him for a year and a half. And I was fortunate that, I would steam vegetables, got a food processor. I was able to be home and to do that for him, to make all the foods. And I was very careful about everything and what he was eating. I knew a lot about food. So I felt like, I've got this down. It's going to be good. The older he got, I don't want to say it was a skinny kid, but he was really tall. He was, he's growing, but he's a boy. And my concern as a mom is I want to make sure he's getting enough. He always liked lentils. He always liked beans. Then he got older and it got a little more challenging. My husband was always a little about having him be vegan, but he was, doing great and there wasn't any issue. When he got older, he's only three now, but as he got to two and we started getting to where he's, going to his friend's house, he's a lot pickier with his food. This was sort of a moral dilemma for me as well, because I'm able to give him what I want at home. But when he's out with his friends, they have play dates and they're just giving these little bowls of goldfish and like cheese and crackers. And, at that moment I was just like, I'm going to be able to control his diet completely at home. I'm going to make him understand why I live this way and what it means to me. And the amazing thing is he asks where food comes from already. He wants to know, he'll say, is this from an animal? Is this from, the ground? Where does it grow? We have a garden. So he understands the concept of, like, we planted seeds, we have tomatoes and eggplant and zucchini. So he's in the whole, he'll eat basil from our garden just like it's a snack. He's a little funny that way, but, and then he cooks with me. We've been cooking together since he was, teeny and the baby Bjorn. So he's sort of understanding that, but he's not a vegan anymore. And he is in the house with me. I also want him to have a normal childhood. And I chose this diet as an adult. And while I do know the benefits of it, I want him to be able to go to Chuck E. Cheese and have pizza and have fun and be normal and not have to, be the kid who brings a sprouted tofu sandwich to school. While I know that's healthier, I just don't want to, out my kid in that way. Because my mom would never let me have Wonder Bread as a kid. And I was so mad at her for that for so many years. Like, everyone else is having Wonder Bread. Why do I have to have pumpernickel? It was mean. So I'm not going to put Jack through that. He's cool. I'm going to ruin his little surfer boy rep. I think that it's totally fine. There's so many parents that raise vegan kids. I just think it's very important to really know what you're doing and to just be prepared. I make chili and there's, so many different kinds of soy, the crumbles you can put in it. What I tell people in that situation is, try to find out what your child should be getting per day. Know what this many grams of protein should be, talking to your pediatrician, should it be, three servings that are this big, what does that mean? And then just sort of know your protein sources. But for me, it's really a balance of, I'm going to teach him what I know. I'm going to teach him, my passion for this. I'm going to do the best I can to feed him at home, but I'm not going to be, I'm going to let him go to birthday parties and let him eat whatever he wants and close my eyes and pretend that I don't want to hear about it. And I'm away, and so who knows what my husband and my son are eating now. I don't ask, and they don't tell me. But when he's older, I'm sure he's going to rat my husband out and tell me all the things he's eating. It's gross, but his favorite food right now is sardines. What three-year-old likes sardines? But my husband's French, and, like, he likes weird food. So I can't, you know, I wanted to keep the vegan thing going in him, but he discovered sardines. And it's disgusting, and they smell. But then I'm trying to say, okay, omega-3 fatty acids, okay. There's something positive in there. So am I, you know, do I feel great that he's not a vegan? No, but I think when he's older, I'm going to get him. and then he's gonna go my way. But he doesn't even eat that much of it. I think, you know, he likes to have a little bit of French cheese, and it's, you know, oh, but still, I have to let him explore. So I hope that helped my own weird way. You know, it's a good question. And I think that one of the misconceptions is that we need, you know, a huge amount of protein. When I was researching for Skinny Bastard, and I was, you know, doing a lot of research about the athletes, I get it. They're, you know, they work out like crazy, and they do need more. I think, you know, when you, it's about, oh my God, it really depends on your, you know, your energy level, what your exercise levels are, what your weight is. I'm trying to think what I don't even go by numbers anymore. I'm like, okay, I go through my checklist in the midday, like, all right, you know, how many vegetables has Jack had? What did I eat for breakfast? I usually do a tofu scramble for breakfast, and even just having, like, you know, a hand size of it, that's already almost half of the protein that I need for that day. I wish that a number would come into mind. I want to say, like, 28 grams of protein, I think, might be about average, and I could be pulling it out of my butt. I really don't remember right now. But if you just get, you know, a handful, whatever, could be beans, lentils, tofu. I cook a lot with seitan just because it can, if you put it in something that has a good flavor or sauce, it'll, you know, take on that flavor. And that's a really good source of, tempeh and seitan are great sources of protein. And then you're not, you know, they're not really the processed fake meats. Because I don't eat those too much anymore, but I want to say I would stick to the, you know, in the upper 20 range. But, you know, you're going to get it from, you know, if you're eating, like I said, a balanced diet, even, you know, you're getting a handful of nuts throughout the day, you're going to get enough protein. Anyone else? This lady here. Oh, this lady with the hat.
I like to eat a lot of beans, and I work full time, so often I'll make chili with a bunch of cans. And then I read a while ago that these cans have some really bad, I don't know if it's estrogen or some kind of something that's terrible for us. So do you have any feeling, what's your feeling about beans and cans?
I'm all for them. I want to say that I'm this, you know, oh, I soak my beans and then I cook them. No. I mean, realistically, who wants to spend the time doing that? I mean, The Bachelor is on. Like, I have things to do. No, my kid would never let me spend the time doing that. I think it's great, and it could be something that I do try to do every once in a while. I always manage to screw them up. Always. I don't know what it is. I've tried to cook beans before. It never works. It can be done, though. But why? You have low sodium cans of beans, and you get them organic. I think it's great if you have the time and you can do that. Of course, it's going to be healthier, but, you know, it's enough to get people to eat healthy. It's enough to get people to cook, make it as simple on you as possible, and just look for the low sodium. I think for me, that's the best bet. But beans are so good for you. So it's great that you're eating them. I mean, think of what the alternative is. Oh, you know, I'm eating from a can. It's low sodium. It's organic. Or you're eating, you know, a fried chicken fried steak, or, you know, you're still doing good. I say it's good. The lady there.
Are there other tips? Because I think vegan, vegetarian eating, it takes an inordinate amount of preparation. I mean, it's all the washing, it's all the chopping, it's all the combining and then storing and keeping it from, you know, going fast. That's one. And on the beans, I think if people don't have a pressure cooker, they should get one.
There's nothing
like a pressure cooker. You can cook a lot of beans in a pressure cooker. They cook very fast, 20 minutes.
Oh, so you just throw everything in and it'll do it for you?
You throw in everything
in. Oh, I love that.
20 minutes, you'll have the beans cooked, and then you could actually freeze them right after that, and so you get away from the can
good
entirely.
That's good to know. Good to know.
I would try.
See, that's it. If something else can do the work for me, right. I'm all about that.
Yeah. But pressure cookers
can't
are
mess
fast
it up.
Without
okay, good.
The soaking, without the... But back to the...
The preparing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of people think that when you first start out that way, that it's like, oh, you know, there's so much work involved. It's the question, and again, I get it because I was there before too. And once you are on the other side and you're eating this way, you realize that it isn't any different than cooking meat or chicken or fish or anything. It's just a matter of knowing what your food substitutes are. And that's really only like the protein. It's just changing the protein up or what you're cooking in. What I need to do, because I'm all over the place in a grocery store, I'll just buy stuff and then I'm home and like, I have nothing to make for dinner. But yeah, you were just at the store. So I need to be prepared. I need to like sit down. Sundays is the day that I look at my cookbooks and I think, all right, what am I going to make for dinner this week? And I'll think, okay, this night I'm going to make this. And then I want it to carry over to the next day so we can either, you know, have it for leftovers or have it for lunch and make my list and just be really, really precise, you know what I need to get. I hate wasting food. It really bugs me. So in order to not have food go bad, I'm just prepared. It's so easy to once you get used to, you know, to cooking that way. But nothing has it's no different. You know, the food going bad or the vegetables or the fruit. Hopefully, you know, even meat eaters are eating those sort of foods as well. I mean, I cook a lot of Italian, and it's. I take, you know, the vegetables from my garden and I only have like, it's only, you know, it's not even that big and I have a planter with some herbs and stuff. Once you get used to cooking that way, honestly, you'll notice that you're cooking food anyway. It's just a matter of what kind of food am I cooking? The first book was, I always call that the transition book, to sort of bring you into the vegan vegetarian world. You know, it does have some fake meat in there, and that's what gets a lot of people through the transition of you know, giving up meat, and I did. And then as you progress in the diet, I think you do, you know, you rely less on that. It is a little processed. So this cookbook is huge. This is 150 recipes. It's 300 pages. There's color pictures, which the first one didn't have. And this is just normal food. It's to show people that, you know, you want to eat this way. Even if you don't want to be vegan or vegetarian, here's some good dishes, you know, one night a week, side dishes. But, you know, average food that doesn't taste vegan. It's fresh food. You know, nothing weird or obscure or hard to find, but just a way to show people that, you know, you can eat this way. It tastes good. It's healthy. And it won't take that long to cook. So that'll look for that in, October? And it'll help you with your, how do I cook this way? It'll be good. And the woman over there?
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. I read that you have a master's degree in holistic nutrition. Where did you study and when did you obtain it?
What does that mean, holistic nutrition? A lot of people ask that. When I read the Potatoes Not Prozac, I was changing my health and I knew, I'm like, okay, I want to study nutrition. I want to know how to, I need to do this for my life, for a living. I was living in Florida at the time, and I was trying to get into a program and, you know, study nutrition. And then I was faced, I knew I was going to also be moving to California, and I was going to be an out-of-state resident for a while.
The problem that I had with, I think, you know, registered dietitians are wonderful, and a lot of them are really knowledgeable, and they really try to get people to eat well. There's also an awful lot of them that, you know, believe in artificial sweeteners are okay, and just, there's just so many things that I really just didn't believe in. And honestly, I just really didn't have the money to go to a university and do that. So I was thinking, I really want to learn outside of the box, because there's something more to this, and I need to learn a different way. So distance learning was, at the time, well, kind of still is, the only alternative that I had. All I had was my associate's degree from community college. And I mean, this is still to this day, I think one day I'm going to go back to a university and I am going to get that, you know, be a dietitian. I don't think I could get through all the math and the chemistry, though. But it was Clayton College of Natural Health, and they're out of Alabama. And, you know, sometimes people, you know, give me hell for, it's not a real school. That's fine, but I couldn't have ever written Skinny Bitch if it wasn't for that school, because all the research I did, it was because that school, like, opened my mind to, you know, just looking at food differently and looking at, you know, so everyone says this is good for you, but is it really? So I got that a couple years ago, and I actually signed up for the PhD program just because I want to just continue to keep learning about food, but I haven't started yet because I've been busy with the cookbook. But for me, I just always think, no, I don't have the same training that people do, but for me it was just a decision that I made. I wanted to learn outside of the box. I wanted to learn something different, and I have plenty of time to go back to school if I choose to do it the other way. But the stuff in this book, like, I didn't make any of it up. This is not my idea. These are, you know, I'm taking them from other doctors and authors and, you know, health studies and, you know, medical school websites, that I'm just compiling other people's information in a really good way so people could read it. But, you know, the first interview I ever did to promote the book was the Today Show. I was just petrified to be on TV, and it was live. And Meredith Vieira, like, had her way with me. Your degree is not real. And I'm scared to death. But. So, yeah, for some people, they're like, yeah, you know. But again, the book could have never had what it had in it if it wasn't for sort of learning outside the box. I love them.
Online, because I am into holistic, you know, being healthy.
Yeah, I mean,
just
didn't
know which way
to
go. I've been studying for years, but yeah. I never went to a university.
I know. I mean, I know that to get that, you know, the RD at the end of your name, it depends on what you want to do with your career. But for me, it was just more important to learn, you know, my truth. And my truth is doing it the holistic way, because I feel that's more what I believe in. I think it's a great school. I've learned a lot from them. And I've turned, like, four people, well, my close friends, but people always email me and I tell them about the school. I think it's great. I know Bastyr in Seattle. It's another, like, holistic school. And they have much more, like, accredited through the state maybe, but it means there's more schools popping up, which is great. Bastyr, and it's in Seattle, and it's a really good school. Okay, one more question, anyone? Oh, the gentleman back there. God, I feel like, what do they have, the auctions? And the gentleman back there has won.
I'm sure you could stand toe-to-toe with any registered dietitian. I'm somewhat familiar with Clayton, and they do a very good job. My question is, you're in a position to influence and educate an awful lot of people. Have you looked into, in detail, genetically modified foods, and will that be something that you'll be able to help the general population realize the problems and the dangers if I could throw out a website, centerforfoodsafety.org.
Oh, good. No, that is a good one.
Great resource. So if you could elaborate on your position on genetically modified.
I have, there's like a couple words in my vocabulary, genetically modified and artificial. And I always tell people when they ask me, you know, my diet soda, and, you know, people are addicted to their diet soda. And I just say, like, I want you to just say that word to me, you know, artificial sweetener or genetically modified. I mean, does that really sound like something that you should be eating, something that's so far away from what natural food is? And when you have people kind of say, all right, logically, yeah, it's true. No, I think it's awful. I think we've come so far away from just what a normal diet is. When I was growing up, we didn't go to restaurants very often. I went to McDonald's when I had my braces off. It was like the biggest thing in the world because I was 13. I went to McDonald's, and I probably didn't go until, you know, the next year. And I think that's one thing that's important about this cookbook is I'm trying to get people to say, you know, let's get back in the kitchen and let's like cook food and keep it as pure and natural and simple as possible. And even if you can't give up meat, but you can give up, you know, diet soda, okay, then that's one step in the right direction. We'll work on the meat after. But anything that you know is made in a lab or something that's, you know, changed any sort of molecular structure, why? It doesn't make sense to me. Is it something that I'm going to be able to, you know, want to talk about in greater detail? Yeah, definitely. I think it's important, and that's why when I do tell people about, you know, eating tofu and soy products, you know, that's why you should go organic. So, good point. Okay. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for coming out. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.